Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to another episode of The Savage Truth. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Thank you so very much for joining me. If you're new to this channel, well, that just makes you smart. And thank you for making the decision for joining in the conversation. I welcome you with open arms. Do me a favor, sit back, relax, enjoy the comments, enjoy the conversation, but tell someone else about the show. Bring them on back for next time, and then you will become one of my ride or dies, the loyalists, the people who tune in on a regular basis. You are the reason that I tune in and do this every week. I could not, would not, and am not interested in doing this without you. Thank you so very much for your continued support. Now, whether you're new or returning, I have an ask, and it is always the same, to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And we need to get into this whole dealio because there's always something going on, and particularly in the next 4 years with Donald J. Trump at the helm. Now, this continues to be a subject. I don't know why, but it just keeps coming up. And we need to talk about Joe Biden's missing marbles, because now he has a former aide who was apparently talking about this. So we need to talk about her. Ashley Williams. Strap in, because this is the latest episode in the Biden administration's Twilight Saga, featuring none other than Ashley Williams, longtime Biden loyalist and recent star witness in the House investigation of Grandpa Joe, let's say his mental elasticity. Okay, we're going to talk about his missing marbles, but this is still a subject. I can't tell you why, but for nearly 6 hours behind closed doors, Williams did the political equivalent of pleading the fifth. One, two, three, four, fifth, right? She couldn't recall anything. Not whether she spoke to Biden last week, not whether he used a teleprompter at meetings, not even whether discussions about him using a wheelchair ever happened. I mean, you work next to the man every day, and you can't remember if he's rolling into cabinet meetings like FDR. I mean, come on, seriously, Ashley, we're not buying the memory wipe. We're simply not buying it. This wasn't a testimony. It was a tragic performance of 50 first dates, White House edition, of course. Now, let's be honest. The only thing Ashley seemed to remember with crystal clarity was her closing line that Joe Biden currently, right now, is still fit to be president today. Really? If forgetting, I can't even, look at me, I'm tongue-tied. If forgetting what day it is and confusing Egypt with Mexico is your idea of fit, then I guess we're redefining the word the way they've redefined woman. I mean, this is the same man who wandered off at a G7 summit like he was searching for the early bird buffet. This is the same president who had to be physically guided by world leaders like a nursing home field trip. That president. And while Ashley may not remember waking him up from naps, we all remember the infamous freeze-ups, the slurred speeches, and wide-eyed, confused stares at the screens. What planet am I on, right? This is what makes this even more comical, if it weren't so sad, is how Democrats have turned denial into an Olympic sport. They want us to ignore what we see with our very own eyes, what we actually witness, what we're actually watching, right? But voters aren't stupid. Americans are not stupid. Well, you know. The White House press team is basically functioning as a political hospice staff. That's what they were doing for the 4 years that he was in a slow decline, keeping up appearances while shielding the public from the president's decline, the obvious decline that everyone could see and was witnessing literally from every appearance. Meanwhile, liberal media outlets either pretended none of this was happening or were quietly whispering about age when it clearly was a matter of cognition. Let's not forget when MSNBC awkwardly cut Biden's mic mid-sentence at a live event. America saw it, Ashley. America witnesses. We know what we saw. It was just so glaringly obvious. So here's the real headline, my friends. We were being led by a man whose own staff couldn't recall, now she can't recall, if he was awake or if he was talking. If your job is to escort the president and you can't remember if he used a teleprompter or not, or if he used a wheelchair, or even if you talked to him last week, what does that actually tell us? Either you're lying to protect your boss or your former boss, or he was so far gone, you all have normalized his dysfunction, right? Either way, this country deserved better than a president whose competency had become a punchline and it was a total cover-up. We needed a leader, and we have it now, who remembers where the heck he is at all times and maybe even remembers our name while he's at it. Let's talk about Charlie Kirk. This is really important, and I want particularly conservative Republicans and independents, for that matter, to remember this, or anyone who voted in this last election for President Trump, okay? Because we need to talk about the future, in particular to the younger generation, because Charlie Kirk is really sounding an alarm here. And it's not with cynicism, but it's with absolute clarity about a generational shift that could shape the political future of America. Now, according to Charlie Kirk, younger voters, particularly those in the 18 to 21 range, now we're talking really, really young, right? Some of them who have voted for the first time, possibly, are showing signs of trending conservative, which is a fantastic thing, right? We absolutely love that, right? Not because of party loyalty, but due to deep personal disillusionment, okay? We want young Americans participating in the political arena here in America. It feels like we get America back, right? We want all engaged. These are the young Americans whose high school and college milestones were erased by COVID lockdowns, right? They were affected. There was no prom for them. There was no graduation or a very, you know, edited version of a graduation. No in-person classes. This is who we're referring to. They were promised safety by institutions they were told to trust, but all they got was isolation. They received loss and bureaucratic indifference. Now, as they step into adulthood, they're skeptical, and they were, rightfully so, of the government and to systems that claim to protect them, but actually failed them when it mattered most. Now, this mistrust has only been compounded by the real-time struggles of the Biden era, and we're still, you know, living in that, and Donald Trump is working diligently to erase that and bring the, you know, America back that we know it. But Kirk points out to this ballooning inflation and unaffordable housing market and record-breaking illegal immigration as practical, invisible failures that really hit this Gen Z where it actually really, really hurt them. These aren't abstract policy debates for them, okay? They don't sit around and debate it. It's very simple and black and white for them. They've lived through those experiences. And we as lived Americans, right, those of us with life experience need to acknowledge and recognize that. Many can't afford rent. They're living in their parents' basement yet, or they can't afford to leave, right? Or they have to get 4 or 5 different roommates in order to afford the rent, let alone dream of owning a home. Their campuses are hotbeds of leftist indoctrination, but when they open a credit card bill or see unchecked chaos at the border, they are increasingly aligning with the political movement that speaks plainly values, sovereignty, and prioritizes economic opportunity, right? This is why they voted for Donald Trump. They loved and embraced enthusiastically the Donald Trump's America First agenda. Now, what Charlie Kirk is warning is that the GOP cannot afford to sit back and assume these voters are locked in. We cannot take their vote for granted. We can't take any American's vote for granted, for that matter. But particularly for Gen Z, this isn't a generation looking for slogans, okay? They're looking for solutions. They know what they were promised, and they want what they were promised. If Republicans fail to fix the ownership crisis, the cost of living, and the broken promises of the American dream, then these voters may turn elsewhere to radical ideas like we're hearing out of New York with this Mondani, okay? And this is a reference to far-left ideologies pushing socialism, state dependency, and cultural upheaval. They want security. The clock is ticking, okay? There's no room for complacency. If the GOP wants to lead a generation betrayed by bureaucracy, it must become the party that empowers them before someone else weaponizes their frustration. That's really important. So Gen Z, you know what? We appreciate the fact that they participated in this, the latest election. They want ownership. They actually want to live the American dream. There is absolutely no time for complacency. Republican leaders need to be mindful of that. And unfortunately, we move on to yet another story. And I hate, but the frequency of this particular subject is continuing to, it just continues to pop up. We have another female teacher predator. Yes. It's almost as if these female teachers who are having sex with their male students live in a vacuum or a cave and they don't read the news and they're not listening, right? Because we're seeing this disturbing pattern as it continues to emerge in both the United Kingdom and the United States, where young female educators, once entrusted to shape the minds of our youth, are instead being brought into courtrooms for allegations of sexual abuse. Now this week, just another week now, okay, 29-year-old former physical education teacher Bonwen James of Wiltshire, England, appeared in a Salisbury court facing 13 charges related to alleged sexual offenses against three children over a span of 3 years. The accusations include 4 counts of sexual activity with a boy, 6 counts with girls under the age of 16, 2 counts of sexual communication with a minor, and 1 count of producing an indecent image of a child. Now, while the hearing was brief, the implications are anything but. James's case is part of an increasingly visible epidemic of misconduct among young, often progressive female educators, right? We need to pay attention to this pattern. Just last month in the U.S., right here in the U.S. of A., unfortunately, 2 more female teachers were indicted on similar grounds. We had Alyssa Perry, a 35-year-old teacher from New Jersey. She was charged with sexually assaulting a 17-year-old former student of her at her residence. Meanwhile, in Illinois, 30-year-old high school teacher Christina Formella was indicted on over 50 counts, including sexual assault, aggravated criminal sexual abuse, and indecent solicitation. She allegedly carried out assaults during what should have been academic tutoring sessions. Now, in both cases, the victims were minors under their care and under their authority, making these acts not only criminal, but a complete betrayal of trust placed in the hands of these educators. Okay. The tragedy here is not just the abuse itself, but the cultural normalization of inappropriate relationships, often minimized when the perpetrator is a woman. Now, if the roles were reversed, we have to talk about this. If these were male teachers instead of female teachers, right? If these were male teachers and female victims, the media outrage would be swift and it would be merciless. Yet in many cases, society treats female offenders as misguided or even emotionally unstable rather than as actually what they are, predators. Sexual predators. This reflects a broader erosion of moral and institutional standards in schools. This is fueled by declining discipline, lacked parental rights, and a progressive culture that tiptoes around accountability when it contradicts its preferred narratives. And therefore we get this result, which brings us to an important and oddly nostalgic question. Now, I ask this all the time. Whatever happened to the older conservative female teacher? Where does she go? You know the one. Maybe her name was Miss Bailey. Okay. She had a firm handshake, a no-nonsense tone, and ran her classroom like a courtroom presided over by Judge Judy's meaner cousin. Her hair was gray. It was always pulled back into a no-frills bun. And I'm here to educate, not entertain. Right? Her glasses sat permanently at the tip of her nose, allowing to peer over them with silent judgment that could straighten even the most crooked teenage spine. She wore skirts below the knee, smelled of Jean Nate of Avon, and that timeless floral musk and walked with a purpose in those big orthopedic shoes that could probably survive a natural disaster, okay? No social media, no selfies, no TikTok dances, just chalk dust, paper grades, and red ink, and a deep love of the Constitution and the proper grammar, right? Bring Miss Bailey back. Miss Bailey didn't try to be your friend. She sure as heck wasn't flirting with 15-year-old boys. She had more integrity in her pinky finger than half the faculty lounge put together. She taught Shakespeare like it was gospel. Made sure you knew the difference between there, there, and there. You understand what I'm saying? And gave extra credit for knowing the preamble. You didn't dare talk back to her because one look from her could send you straight into an existential crisis. She didn't care about being liked because she wasn't there for a popularity contest. She was there to prepare you for the real world, turn you into a good citizen, which she reminded you often. Does not give participation trophies. That's not what she did. She was tough, maybe even terrifying. But years later, you'd look back and realize she was the one who actually made a difference in your life. And the best part, she never once ended up on the evening news in handcuffs. Maybe it's time we bring back more Miss Baileys and a little less of whatever we've got walking in the halls today. And that, my friends, is a savage truth. Now, let's watch The Gift of Puppies. Rick, roll the footage.
Nick, come closer.
All right. 1, 2, 3.
Dog, you want it?
Move it, move it, move it!
Oh, hi, you come see your great grandma, did you? Oh, oh my gosh.
Oh. This is my little boy.
Oh, you are
surprised.
Like your great grandma, don't you? Yeah. Well, come in, come in.
One finger. Touch it. Go.
Oh my god, what is that?
What is it?
Surprise, shawty!
Cute. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, to be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.